Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Here we go again. Whether it's in the state or, in this case, across the country, math and reading skills for kids, not even close to where we would want them. In math, 12th graders had the lowest performance since 2005. This is from the National Assessment of Educational Progress, long regarded as kind of the gold standard. I'm assuming RFK Jr. doesn't agree with it, and he's going to fire people from it, but we'll find out that later. About Dave, a third of 12th graders who tested last year did not have basic reading skills. In math, nearly half of the test takers scored below the basic level, meaning they have not mastered a skill such as using percentages to solve real word problems. It's like they should go with you, and when a tip comes up, it's zero, so then they won't need it.
It's the easiest way to do it.
First of the kind released since the COVID pandemic completely changed education as we know it for a period of time. Adolescents who, without the evil virus, would have been in school. Then the debate on how long should they have been kept out, what each state did, and the lasting impact on these kids. Clearly, it has had an impact. But to suggest before the testing, oh, everything was great. Everything was fine. Is utter nonsense. What happens a lot, we have states will say, well, for you to graduate, you not only have to pass the required classes, but you have to have test scores at a certain level. Remember we tried that, and then we just kept lowering them and lowering them and lowering them.
Mm-hmm.
Or eliminating them. Because we would have had too many kids, 12th grade, who found a way to graduate but didn't measure up with the test scores. And I'm not saying the test scores tell everything. They certainly don't. We've had the conversation before about bias. We've had the conversation about timing. We've had the conversation of better judges, you know, whether it's quarters or semesters, that's a better reflection of true academic progress. Then we have the debate on parents and their involvement and what is going on at home and the single parent debate. We have the debate on teachers and tenure and longevity and can you fire them? Involvement of if the parents are uncomfortable with teachers, how much sway do they have? And then is it just, you know, petty bitterness because Sammy's not passing the class and you're mad? Then we have a massive shortage in special education funding. All these things, I don't have the perfect answer. I offer up a lot of topics where I say we should do A, B, and C. What should we do here? We just going to keep going this way? Where decade after decade, we're just going to look at test scores and your girls are going to be there. Not that far from now. And maybe your girls are going to flourish, or maybe your girls are going to be in the area of whether it's reading and math, and we'll kind of shake our heads, but they'll still graduate. And some will go to college. Some you'll be like, did these test scores really matter? And others, it will have a factor. Now, in the AI world, who knows where we're going? But as long as we're testing and the scores continue to be, okay, pick your word, problematic, awful, troubling, what should we do? Simple question. What should we do to give kids a better opportunity to flourish? My kids went to public schools the entire time. Hunter and Griffin and Quentin, even with Quentin's challenges, I went to public schools my entire life in the Robbinsdale School District. This is no easy bashing of the public schools because somebody went to private schools in my family. Didn't. I think we need more experimenting, Dave. We can't keep doing the same thing. And if it causes less kids to attend traditional public schools, and then we run into funding issues, I get it. But shouldn't we give greater opportunity for charter schools? Shouldn't we give greater opportunity for individuals who want their kids to go to private schools but don't have the finances? Shouldn't we encourage more experimenting in the public schools? I'm not saying we have to blow up every single thing that makes up the core of our education. But if these numbers continue to be where they are at, and then we'll just have more candidates saying, if I get elected, they're going to change. Kristen Robbins. That's one of her calling cards, if she runs against Tim Walz or not. By the way, tomorrow on the docket, at some point, when is Tim Walz going to make his decision? Let's discuss that, because I think the fair ended. We're trying to confirm, but I think the fair end.
Last Bronco pup just got sold.
Yeah. So what should we do? Let's pause right here. I would love a number of phone calls on this. I would love a number of texts. You can send me ideas where I think, geez, that's ludicrous. But maybe we need to try it. It's just, to me, it's somewhat analogous to the number of mass shootings and mass killings in our country, where we're so entrenched in our positions that we don't want to try anything different because it's an affront to what I totally believe in. So let's see more states trying different things, including us, where often we have better test scores. But let's not forget, many, many, many years, our state, the disparity between whites and kids of color, is the worst in the country. So maybe put our shoulders back in our sockets from patting ourselves on the back. What would you do to try to allow more kids to have success, including, as one judge of it, test scores? Or are these just you just don't believe in these as an apt way to evaluate? And considering what's going on with AI, we shouldn't spend that much time on it anyway. That's pretty defeatist. To me, that seems pretty avoiding the issue by just saying, the world's going to change so much it doesn't matter. What do you want to say? Phone calls and texts. 651-461-9226. I'll give an example of something where you can at least explore something to see if it's worth the change. Nobody is excited to pay their car insurance. No one is excited to pay their home insurance. These rates are not cheap. They're a pain, but they're required. You need them. They are essential. And there are times you may feel like, for years and years I'm paying this and I never use it, and then an awful accident happens. Or, you know, it's raining out, a storm takes place, and there's hail damage on your roof, and you don't want to pay for it. That's why you have insurance. Now, I'm going to tell you, it's worth it to go with my friends with American Family and Amber Scholl, who's running a local office. an office I've been associated with since I moved back long, long time ago. Amber's been associated with the office for 15 years and run into the last few years and getting great feedback from WCCO listeners. So thank you, including a number of people switching to TeamShoal.com. It's worth it. TeamShoal.com, again, with American Family. Go online, sign up, have a conversation. Amber, a member of the team, and run through what you have, and they might say, well, you're in good shape. Or they might say, we can help you, and here's why. TeamShoal.com, the place I've been using that office for 35 years.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
We still haven't given out the Twins tickets, correct?
Stay tuned for the thing. Hear the sounder. Be call it three.
You'll hear the sounder. Twins Yankees next Tuesday. Jamie Yuccas in 15. Another report with disastrous test scores. What should we do to improve overall education? We have the debate endlessly. It's different from district to district, school to school, state to state. But when presented these nationwide test scores, a part of the pandemic, where many of the kids struggled, some mightily, are we overreacting? Maybe that's part of the conversation. But to me, too often, Dave, we see this. You get comments. You get a superintendent on the Department of Education, our emphasis. And I want them to try. Because if we just keep doing the same thing, it's not good enough. But I would love to see more results where enough districts have tried it, enough states have tried it, and there is a discernible difference in what is taking place.
Something has to change. That's clear. I mean, it's if we can't blame the pandemic anymore, in my opinion. It's been 5.5 years since COVID hit us.
Yeah.
All right, that's plenty of time to say, okay, COVID was hard on a lot of kids.
Okay, for the comeback, for the alternative, for some to say, well, my kid was in eighth grade, and it had a significant effect on him or her that I never could have envisioned. And if you saw my child, you would see what I'm talking about. You say what?
I'd say I'm sure it did. But we've still had 5 years to teach them basic math and reading.
Yeah. I think it's fair. I think it's very fair. Jake has called in plenty of texts also, 651-461-9226. Thank you, Jake, for listening. Go ahead, sir.
Hey, guys, great topic. Thank you for bringing it up. I am a member of the St. Francis School District, but I do not speak for the St. Francis School District. I'm only one vote of seven. And then I also have a couple of kids that have gone through the district. I have a senior right now who's just absolutely killing it. I have a daughter who's doing really great in school and then postgraduate in college. You know, we get a lot of complaints that, you know, the schools are failing me. And I keep asking some of these parents, well, what are you doing, you know, about this? Because you know, we got to do our job. I'm not at all excusing that as an institution, but boy, oh boy, parents, whether your kids are doing whatever they're doing, please give them the love and support and necessity you can, the time. And I don't just mean parents, but whoever the guardians are, that's kind of a part of it too. But I just think that, you know, the results would be welcomed. We are currently, we just got our results back and we're like 3% higher than the state average. And so we're supposedly supposed to celebrate that. But to tell you the truth, it's still horrendous. And to be fair, scores were bad before the pandemic. You can go back before the pandemic.
Well,
and
yeah,
see
well
things
before,
were already going that way. In my opinion, we're not going to move the needle unless we get more parental buy-in, because even in these times where overall it's showing up to being absolutely horrible, there are shining stars. There are people who are still, you know, doing their job. And if they're a C student, you know, some of them get B's, and that's awesome and should be celebrated. And if they're, you know, a C student and they get B's, well, they need to, you know, we need to hold them accountable and have a little bit more work in that regard. But as far as I'm concerned, you know, continued results like this, everything's on the table. And there's also so many facets to this, it's mind-boggling. But yep. I would say in the meantime, every parent, every family needs to make sure they're doing their part, or just sit back and complain about it. Your kid's going to come out a complete dunderhead, and that ain't going to do anyone any good. So
Jake,
do your part, parent. Help us out.
Really good call. I appreciate that. Yeah, it's one thing in life, Dave, and it's with your kids and other aspects. If you're just going to point fingers and blame and not adjust on your own, or blame something that happened 10, 20, 30 years ago and not just move on, that's not really the proper way to approach life.
No, we can do better.
And there's too many people who do that on a regular basis. Steve has called in. Thank you, Steve, for listening. You're on WCCO.
Oh, hi, Chad. Good subject. I think that the biggest problem in education has been a resistance to incorporating technology into teaching. You know, if you work in the private sector, even parts of government, you've seen your operations transform dramatically and become so much more efficient because of websites, computers. You don't see that in education. And I've had this conversation, and there is like a fear that that's going after the teacher. And the only metric you hear about is student-to-teacher ratio.
Yep.
And, yes, you could probably have less teachers if you have more computer-aided technology. The State Department, the military, when they teach a language, they're using something like Burlett's, okay? And that might be even more effective. But I have had this conversation. There is resistance. But you will also hear from some people that really look at it in an enlightened fashion that some kids do learn better when there's technology involved. And he talked about earlier, the earlier caller, about parental buy-in. What a great way to get the parents involved is you can get them right on the platforms that are teaching your kids. And it doesn't have to be for every kid, but it has to be part of the equation.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it. Let's keep the calls going. You want to join in, you can. A number of texts have come in, too. I'll read a number of those after this next call. 651-461-9226. Patty, you're on the Home of the Twins CCO. Go ahead, Patty.
Hi. I'm a substitute teacher. Pre-COVID, it was a totally different job experience than post-COVID. And I've taken a job at Lund's now, and I still do sub once in a while, but it's a completely different situation when you're subbing. And I did a lot of special ed subbing. And the last room that I subbed in St. Paul, you know, there was two aides that were brand new and no teacher. In walks me, and there's about 12 special needs kids. And it's just chaos. And you've got a 9-year-old kind of help diapering a 5-year-old. And it was absolute mayhem. And that's when I could lose my license if something went wrong, which it will in those situations. But yeah, I mean, they're not funding it. They don't, especially special ed, they're not funding it.
Yeah, it's awful.
And the teachers are more exhausted than the kids. If I work in a regular school, regular education, the behaviors are just unbelievable. Like, you know, you'll say to a kid, you know, it's time for math, put the phone away, and he'll just look at you like unfazed. Like, what the hell are you going to do about it? You're a sub. What, you know, there's no, it never used to be like that, you know?
Thank you, Patty. I appreciate the call. So listen, Patty has lived this. So I'm not taking away from what Patty witnessed. Okay. That legit. Do a lot of people believe there's more defiance from the kids now than there used to be? There are a lot of people believe that. Okay. I graduated high school. I know. A little bit ago. to suggest there wasn't defiance back then is silliness. There was. Was it as pervasive? I honestly don't know. Because I think it is very convenient for a lot of people, the further we get away from something, to just act like it was flawless, it was a well-oiled machine, everyone sat there with rapt attention and paid close attention to every word that was said. Well, we know that isn't true. We also know that when I graduated in 1983, this little contraption here wasn't in my hand, the phone, or all the other distractions which are out there, which are part of it, which at times empowers kids to be even more defiant and to be more of a jackass, to be honest. Gives them a further platform. I will say on the special education side, because of Quinton, we visited a number of schools. Decided to stay in the Wayzata School District, the most misnamed school district in the state, because there's one school in Wayzata.
It's a great school.
Though. Every other school is in Plymouth.
Great
so,
school.
Yeah, our kids attended the Plymouth School District. And because what is called Wayzata High School, but should be called Plymouth High School, I was so concerned about Quinton. But the number of brilliant special education teachers, whether they were 21 or 61, we were lucky. Made the decision to move there, had some finances available if we needed to move. Seeing Quinton interact with the mainstream kids was spectacular. And I'm sure there are many kids who make comments about my son, and that would just crush me if I heard those comments. So it's all over the place. Special education funding is embarrassingly low. And we have this cross-section of individuals, including in our state, Dave, where English is the second language. And right now, we demonize so much of immigration when there's so many of our friends and neighbors who have been here legally, who are decent, kind individuals who work near you or go to businesses and they help you out, or they're your neighbors. And even, by the way, some, oh, my God, people have been here for 20 years, didn't come here legally, and they're also successful. But when English is the second language, that makes it a lot harder. When you're certain teachers and you're in there with 31 kids when it should be 22, that makes it harder. It is an incredible challenge. It is so essential to what we do. I thought we had three excellent callers. There's a lot of very good techs, too. I just continue to emphasize, I hope we keep trying different ideas, not giving up core principles in total, but we willing to have more schools take and go to different ideas, including if, as Patty suggested, or no, maybe it was Steve, that a lot of teachers have been there for a while, I don't want to do this. I've been here for a while, I don't have to do this. I think there are teachers probably on both sides of that, don't you, who are willing to embrace it?
Sure.
But to act like there aren't teachers and saying, well, what does this mean to my future?
Yeah.
I'm sure there's too much of that.
Natural to think it.
Because there's too much of that in other businesses where all of us might work, where things are always changing, and it can't be just, well, we're just going to stay status quo. You better be in a very unique business if you just stay status quo and you're fine. Thank you for the a number of excellent phone calls and texts. Jamie Ukas joins us after traffic and weather.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Are you ready to talk dreams right now? Dreams.
Yes.
Okay.
Let's do it.
Are you much of a dreamer? Do you remember most of your dreams when you wake up?
I wouldn't say most of them. I feel like maybe once a week I'll remember one, or like maybe more than that, maybe twice a week. I'll kind of, like this weekend, I took a nap both Saturday and Sunday, which was glorious.
Nice.
I remember dreams from both of those.
Yeah. Dave Harrigan, how often when you wake up in the morning, do you remember your dreams?
At most, it's usually a fragment of the dream.
That's,
I'll remember bits and pieces, and then they're usually gone within a couple hours. You could ask me what I dreamed about, and I would have no idea.
See, that's a lot of where I'm at, Jamie, too, where for the first few seconds, if it's a memorable dream, sometimes I remember all of it. But more often than not, it's just leaving me so fast, and many times I'm like, no, stay there.
That's why they tell you to have a journal next to your bed.
Yeah.
Jot them down, like, the minute you wake up.
How often, let's say if you wake up during the night, are you able to go back to a dream? I think that's only happened to me 4 or 5 times in my life. But it's really
cool.
I think it's pretty interesting when it does. And by the way, some of the dreams, I don't want to go back. Like, they're terrifying. They're awful. So I had this dream last night, and I'm not going to say who, but it's someone who I've interviewed on this show. It's someone, it's not like I've socialized with this individual, but whenever we see each other, we're very friendly, okay? And, and we run into each other at a social setting, and he takes the wrong turn and somehow, wait for it because it's not good, gets set on fire.
What?
Is set on fire. The upper body of this individual, and finally I jump on him, others jump on him, and I wake up, and that's my last image of jumping on this individual who out of nowhere, like a flame, again, I would wish I had more of the details, all of a sudden, upper body, and I had recently text with this individual, you know, so, but it was just a minor thing, and we were joking about something. Okay, so if you have a dream about someone you know, or a friend, and it's a very unique circumstance, do you reach out to them and say, hey, I got to tell you about this dream?
It depends on the relationship.
Yeah.
You know, like you're saying, an acquaintance probably wouldn't tell him that I had a dream that he was starting on fire.
Yeah.
Well, you know, like Doug or you or Jason DeRusha or, you know, Alyssa or whatever. Yeah. I'd probably call and tell him.
Right. Let's say it's me. We've known each other a long time. We're good friends. Let's say it was something terrible involving me. Like, I was killed in your dream. Awful. Are we inclined then? I mean, like, I can't imagine where I would just call somebody who's a good friend and say, hey, I just want to let you know you died in my dream last night.
Yeah, no, that's probably not. But I will say I'm a big believer that all of these dreams mean something, right? Like,
okay.
Like there's symbolism in them. The people who are in them for a reason. I do think there's like, I'm woo-woo like this, right? I'm a hippy-dippy human being this way. But, you know, like I just looked up symbolism of fire in dreams, transformation and renewal.
Mm-hmm.
Fire
mm-hmm.
often symbolizes change, cleansing, or a new beginning. The person on fire could represent an aspect of them or of yourself that's undergoing transformation. Can be anger, loss of control, purification. Who the person is matters, it says. Could symbolize fears about their well-being or your relationship with them. Maybe you don't think you're in good standing with this person. So I do, I think there's you can read a lot into what's happening in your own head when you have a dream.
Right.
And then go from there. So like if you were to die in my dream, I might not tell you you died, but I'd probably look into it in the dream journal and say, huh.
What is this? Yeah.
You know, what is this? And then maybe call you and say, hey, I've been really stressed out or I'm worried about you. I know you're going through a tough time. Mm-hmm. What's going on?
Yeah. I go back and forth because I don't want, and Jamie Yukis is with us like she is every Tuesday this time. I don't in any way want to just dismiss what you just laid out because too many people believe in it. Too many credible people believe in it. There's a lot of science behind it. And there are times I have reoccurring dreams where I believe it does symbolize something. But I also believe you also have some dreams where it's just an odd combination of things you've consumed which somehow come together in maybe an inexplicable way.
Or maybe you've done some drugs. Who knows?
Yeah. How about you, Dave? Do you put a lot of symbol into your dreams?
I don't.
Yeah.
I'm not saying I don't believe in it, but I'm kind of with you. I think it's just your mind just taking a bunch of random things, throwing them together, and see what comes out.
But I don't want to dismiss these other dreams that I know to me mean something. I've talked about them before. Okay, let's switch to another topic. Dave found this story today where it seems pretty clear when people think of the top cities in America, Dave, they think of
New York, L.A., Chicago, 1, 2, 3.
That's it. That's the order, right? New York City, L.A., Chicago. Do you agree with those three being separated from the pack?
Well, they're the biggest. I mean, I guess like working in television, they're the largest population is the reason why.
From a
statistical standpoint.
I think Houston might now be the fourth biggest city. Is that possible? It is.
I think you're right. Yes.
But if you just went to the average person and said, okay, after these three, what's the fourth city in America? If we just go by population, it is Houston, and where I used to live, Phoenix / Scottsdale, God knows where that's going to be in about 10 years. I mean, there might be 500 million people there. But do we
I think it depends where you live geographically, because honestly, I think here in Southern California, if you said, what are the top three cities, people would say Los Angeles, San Diego, San Francisco.
Yeah, right. Okay, Dave, when it's just your instinct, as someone who's lived in this country now for 41 years, and somebody said, what's the number four city in America to you? What comes to mind?
Woodbury, Minnesota.
Woodbury, Minnesota. Ironically enough, that's right where you live.
Yeah, I pick good towns. No, the first one that comes to mind is Boston. Houston was in my running, but Houston stinks. No one wants
Houston
to be in Houston.
Houston does stink.
Atlanta, Miami.
See,
what about Philadelphia?
Yeah, Philadelphia is way up. The funny thing is, I also think of San Francisco.
Sure.
I know population-wise, I just think of, I mean, San Francisco brings so much, right?
It's one of our most unique cities in the country, I would say.
Exactly. Also, Jamie, for a lot of people, controversial. A lot of people are upset about the crime. A lot of people push back on it. Then you say, well, okay, when you're in San Francisco, first of all, it's so diverse in the city. And then just all the amazing locations within an hour of San Francisco makes it just amazing to me.
Yeah. I was just there on Labor Day weekend. And being able to take the ferry over to Sausalito and Tiburon, I mean, you know, there's nothing like that. In Seattle, you can hop on a boat and go up and down the waterway, and it's beautiful, too. But San Francisco, you're actually getting, you know, the other ports, you know.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you drive that.
Like you said, are diverse.
You go to Carmel. You go to Napa.
Yeah.
Right? For a city size-wise that isn't as big as some others, to have those signature areas within an hour and 15 is why I think people should travel to San Francisco, because it's so much fun.
Well, and can I just please say, because even here in Los Angeles, you know, there's some people that are like, oh my God, why would you go to San Francisco for your girls' weekend? Like, oh, it's gone, the city's so bad. And I have friends who live up there, and they're like, yeah, you know what, during COVID, it did get bad. And I saw that. I saw the decline happen, you know, traveling up. It is back. It is beautiful. It's clean. You know, is the homeless population there? Yes, it's primarily in one part of the city. Right now it's in the Tenderloin, which is unfortunate that, you know, they need to work on that. But if you, like you just said, you want to go to Fisherman's Wharf, you want to go to a baseball game, you want to go to a basketball game,
I'm with you.
You want to go to Restoration 100%. Hardware even, like you want to go and see the Golden Gate Bridge, you want to go to Chimbrook, you want to go to Sausalito, You want to go up to Napa? It's amazing.
I think
it's amazing. There's nothing like it.
I'm with you. I was there a couple years ago.
Embarcadero.
I thought it was absolutely back. Great stuff, Jamie. Stay safe.
Oh, we'll, hey. I got to plug something quick.
Yeah, quick.
It's important to me, and it's important to Minneapolis.
Yeah.
Vinay Restaurant going to be featured on CBS Mornings on Thursday in the dish segment.
Nice.
Vinay, yeah. Right?
Oh, Vinay. Oh, Vinay. Vinay. Oh, it's tremendous. Absolutely. Receiving just a great review, so well worth it. And when is it on again?
Please tune in. Thursday, probably in the 8 o'clock hour.
Perfect.
Possibly rerunning again at 9.
Absolutely. Thank you, Jamie.
Thank you.
And if you've not been to Vinay, go soon. It is well worth it.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.